Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast for Friday the 13th with a full moon, January the 13th, 2017. I'm Bruce Mitchell, Senior Torch Columnist. Travis Bryant is on assignment tonight, and so we'll be joined momentarily by our friend Rich Fan and from Pittsburgh, and so Rich will be on in just a moment. Of course, new TNA television taping, Josh Barnett, almost the TNA World Heavyweight Champion, and Liberace and his chauffeur, what was his name, Chuck Thorson, made their debuts on TNA. Also, we're another week closer to the Royal Rumble. And of course, anticipation continues to build for the WWE UK tournament. Hard to believe that anticipation isn't building all as much as maybe it did for the Cruiserweight tournament, and with the amount and quality of promos that they have done for this show. So we'll see where those we'll see where all these things go, where they take place. Let's see. I think my friend is here. Rich, I'm coming to you. Rich, is this you?
Yes, sir.
All right. Appreciate you coming in once again. Usually you add your quality to the shows that I'm not on, but now you've got the roles reversed. And I appreciate learning a new word, I knew and didn't want to see, which was venerable. The venerable columnist for the PW Torch, Bruce Mitchell, and Wade Keller jumping in as fast as he can to make sure that everyone understood exactly what that word means. But still, it's kind of hard to deny.
Well, you know, when I saw Wade had hopped on the Torch account and put it, I just wanted to make sure I put my version of it, which was the fact that since you're the senior columnist, I figured you couldn't get that as a first-year guy. So at least Todd can't try to take that away from you anytime soon, unless he lies on the birth certificate.
Well, he's taking everything else away. So, I mean, you know, there you are. So that I don't know if that helps a whole lot, Rich. I'm just saying. So we're let's roll through some stuff. And of course, I've got our usual. I believe we'll have our usual run of callers and some folks coming on in. So, anything strike you today on Friday the 13th with a full moon, teaching elementary school? I may start to cry, but no, it was fine. But yeah, I walked out this morning and looked up, and the moon was just as big as it could be. I was like, oh my god, I should just go. I just turn right back and just go right back to bed and claim I'm sick.
I'm in the same boat, but I'm just older kids with university kids, so I don't know what was in the water today, but it was a little crazier than usual. But on the wrestling I would say on the wrestling front, the biggest thing I took away today was looking on Twitter in between breaks and seeing how much press Triple H is doing for the UK tournament this weekend. With the sandwich between the Royal Rumble and the NXT show, I'm really intrigued to see how they treat the talent they're going to have on that show and what's going to happen after.
So what's your sense of how big or this tournament is? I mean, a 2-day tournament, that's different from taping everything and rolling it out the way the Cruiserweight tournament was, and that seemed to work really well. But this is, you know, again, it's not a full sale university, and it's a lot, you know, it's going to be interesting this weekend to see how this works, how it's taken. But my sense of this is there's not a whole lot of buzz, even if Triple H is out there, shaking the bushes.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat, and this tournament kind of cemented when you, I think last week, and then actually in weeks before, had been mentioning to Wade on your audio show that the body snatchers situation had started. And it's funny to me because in England, they're kind of taking it ITV with the World of Sport. From what I've been reading from the people who are involved on the production side, they don't see it as WWE poaching talent and raiding them. And I feel like it's the ignorance of a lot of the promoters in the 70s and 80s before it was too late. Whereas in Japan, Kidani, the president of New Japan, is coming to America in July primarily because he said WWE came to Japan, so now I'm going to return the favor.
I think there's a security and an insecurity there where New Japan has been established, you know, for decades, and they, you know, and now they've kind of, now they've reestablished themselves in the last several years, and they're not, you know, not to the size that they were in Inoki's heyday, but still, and they have dealt over the years with WWE where they're really, in the time that I've been a wrestling fan, there really hasn't been a golden age of, and that's been 40 years, there hasn't been a golden age of English wrestling. I mean, there's been, you know, there's been good workers, there's been Marty Jones, there's been Dragon Lee, there's been, you know, people there that you know, were highly respected, Finlay, and that kind of thing. But now you see there's this respect for the work that's going on in the ring, and there's starting to get some traction as far as business goes. And so here comes WWE, here comes Triple H, and it's very charming, and you're getting some attention from the mothership, you know, and you don't see the other side of it. And I understand why that's hard to see through, but you know, I have no doubt that WWE does not like the does not like the buzz that these promotions are getting, and this is a way to come in, scout everybody, cherry pick some talent, and make sure that it stays to that these promotions stay to what WWE thinks is a manageable level. Why they care, I think they ought to just compete and they'll be fine. But I mean, as far as WWE goes, but they do.
Yeah, I mean, I look at a lot of the competitors in the tournament. I follow Progress, and I probably talk Travis's ears off and most of my friends who watch wrestling about how awesome it is to watch that show on demand without having to trade tapes or do anything. And most of their top
players,
their tag team champions and their world champion, are in this tournament. And I'm very interested to see how that plays out because Pete Dunne, the Progress world champion, is going up in the first round against Roy Johnson, who's a younger wrestler who I am also a fan of, whose claim to fame is he's a rapper that isn't very good, but he's also a decent wrestler, so he's kind of a goofy dude that's kind of got a mid-card role. But
now,
at the end of the day,
let me ask you: is he really a rapper who's not very good, or he's playing a rapper playing a character who's a rapper who's not very good?
He's playing a character who's a rapper who's not very good.
Okay.
And it started as a heel thing where he would come out and he has this thing called the Wasteland Challenge, where it's a kind of like 8 Mile, where he'll challenge you to a freestyle rap, and it got over because he was so goofy and so silly with his rhymes that the fans embraced him. And then in the ring, he's, you know, most of these guys are going to be technically sound, so he was a power lifter that turned into a pro wrestler that was a fan. So he has a very basic moveset, and much like many of the guys in England, he knows how to use it to the maximum benefit without having to add a flip or something. If he, you know, as he gets older, maybe he's going to do it. But for now, he's just a solid wrestler. So it's really gotten over with people. He's really just got an infectious personality, and I'm really disappointed that they're in the first round together because Pete Dunne is a very good character overall. He's currently in Progress running the CM Punk angle, where he has been retaining the title against everyone, and he's made it clear that anyone who will listen that his goal is to bring the Progress World title with him as he signs on the network and use it as a prop. So I'm interested to see where Progress fits, because William Regal, that's one of the few places he shows up. I think they might be given the favored son status, whatever that is good for, I guess, with the WWE.
Right.
But I'm not sure about the rest of those promotions in England. I'm very concerned that they're just going to try to price him out or, you know, pay the talent money just not to show up that weekend and all the old tricks they used to do.
Yeah, we'll see whether they use all those tricks. I mean, they might. But just taking some talent, bringing them to NXT, and then either not using them very much there, or even if they make a main roster or something, not really being in the plans or fitting the template of what WWE is looking for. The promotions that they work with, Evolve and all that, they give them so little. I mean, that's always interesting to me. If they give them just a tad, that's all. And it's the psychology of it's very smart, but still, what is it that a favored promotion would get from WWE that a promotion that they were not favoring would get, I guess is a way to say it.
Well, I always think about the big issue of, oop, hold on 1 second, my son's asking for more nuggets.
I understand.
The biggest thing I think of is when they do press conferences and Triple H swore up and down that he would not be messing with Ring of Honor, and then lo and behold, they're having all these house shows with NXT the same night as the big pay-per-view Ring of Honor was running in Texas that year.
Right.
And
yeah,
so,
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, and I went last year to WrestleMania, and on the flip side of that, they not only allowed Evolve to be within a hop, skip, and a jump for the wrestlers they wanted to show up on the NXT show to get there in a quick, timely manner, but you know, the Evolve show I was at, where I saw a couple of Torch listeners, including Daniel, who was a great dude, the man from K-State, they actually had to rearrange their card because wrestlers were coming from an NXT event and were going to be 45 minutes late.
Right.
So I don't.
Yeah. That makes sense. 515-605-9345 if you want to listen live. And here's information if you downloaded this or here's some information for you.
When you're looking to tune in live to the PW Torch Livecast, find out about the next episode, or just catch up on an episode you missed, go to our new website, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can select shows by specific day, specific host, and format, including a grid of our latest interviews and best of selections on the homepage. That is pwtorchlivecast.com, where you can stream our show live and listen to past shows on demand. That's pwtorchlivecast.com.
So, Rich, you ready to take some calls?
Yes, sir.
All right. Let's go to our friend Darrell from Georgia. Darrell, welcome to the PW Torch Livecast.
How you doing today, Bruce? How you doing today, Rich?
Good, Darrell. Thanks for asking.
Okay. My couple of talking points, I want to ask Bruce this. Do you think Hickman's Fantastic Four is the best Marvel written book ever? In my opinion, it was. I just wanted to see it in yours.
Jonathan Hickman's run on Fantastic Four. I'm a comic book guy, and go back further with comic books actually than I do with wrestling. But still, I thought it was very, very good. And the thing about it is, I found them on discount about 6 or 7 months ago in a shop in Chapel Hill. But I've got both. In an omnibus style, two omnibuses of his Fantastic Four run. But the truth is that whole Avengers run is also a Fantastic Four run. When it comes right down to it, if you go to the Secret War finale where everything came together, it was everything that Hickman had been doing with the Fantastic Four, and it turned into the ultimate babyface versus heel battle between Reed Richards and Dr. Doom. Dr. Doom is the god of the universe. And anyway, I thought it was very, very good. I still would say very much so that the original from about, the original first 100 issues particularly when Jack Kirby was just on fire with ideas and Stan Lee, there's been nothing like that. And the whole Marvel Universe, including what Jonathan Hickman did, is, you know, really based on as soon as Joe Sinnott came in with the inking and all that. But that stuff is really good. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It's a slow build, though, and it takes forever to get where it's going. But once it gets going, it's a beautiful book. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's good stuff.
Yeah, I was just doing some comparison to certain things, like when Stan Lee wrote a book for DC, the What If story for Batman and stuff like that. And I just always thought Jonathan Hickman's run for Fantastic Four was so amazing with the Council of Reeds and all of that stuff. So that's why I wanted to ask you that first question.
It's really good stuff, no doubt.
Yeah. And Darrell and I have already talked at length about this on Twitter. I am a huge fan of Hickman. I think, and tying this to wrestling, listening to Wade talk to Kevin Eck and Vince's reaction to people won't remember things. Now, you don't have to be a Straczynski or Hickman in terms of like planning something 100 issues before you get to the conclusion, but I think a lot of those things are what fans are looking for in terms of plot, even in something like, quote-unquote, like wrestling. So, yeah, I'm a big fan, and I've been trying to get Travis to read the new infamous Iron Man because the payoff of Doom realizing I could become a god. And now I tried that twice, didn't work. Maybe I should just be a good guy because I can. Not because I think it's a good thing to do. I just can. And the arrogance.
That's a really good, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's a very cool book. That I'm a big fan of that so far. I mean, it's only 4 or 5 issues in, but all those years, I always felt like last 20 years that Dr. Doom needed an update as far as like how he looked. But he's the quintessential heel in the Marvel Universe. And yeah, I'm right there with you as far as that goes. But yeah, Hickman is smart. I think that one thing that you can in both comics and wrestling, and that's a problem, but in comics and wrestling, I think you have to serve the story where the new fan can watch and get it on a level, and then reward the fan who pays attention, and build the new fan into that fan who pays attention even further. And yeah, I agree that this man misses that, incredibly. And sometimes they'll pay it off, but most of the time they don't. But boy, you can keep fans. And I remember as a wrestling fan going, I knew that was something. I knew that those two tag team partners looked at each other, and he looked at him in a weird way. And nothing happened for 3 or 4 weeks, and then I thought there was nothing to it, and then something happened. And you felt like, okay, you know, they're really paying attention to what they're doing. And if I pay attention, if I watch closer, I'll be rewarded. And I think that's worth doing. That's worth doing in any kind of entertainment genre to me.
And that's why I asked that question, because all this ties into wrestling as a whole. I have two talking points that I wanted to hear what you have to say, you and Rich have to say. My first one would be about, I know TNA just got new ownership and stuff like that, but I wanted to ask you, you know, back in the banking crisis, we had this saying, too big to fail. I wanted to ask, do you think people in wrestling have made TNA too big to fail? Because in my eyes, I always feel like TNA should have went out of business years ago. I know people hate saying that because they don't want to see people lose their jobs, but I hate to have a place around that dirty up the water for other companies. So I want to hear what you have to say about that. And then my second point is, I know a lot of people, it's about SmackDown, and will SmackDown have a person from SmackDown win the Rumble? In my eyes, I think no, because they got the Elimination Chamber coming up. And it'll be a good selling point. Maybe if you had a number one contendership in it, maybe AJ Styles beat John Cena. Or if John Cena beats AJ Styles, you have a rematch there. Or if he doesn't, he gets in the Elimination Chamber, maybe try to win some number one contender to then be able to headline WrestleMania. What you guys think about that, and taking into the fact that SmackDown do have a pay-per-view coming up 2 weeks after the Rumble. So what they might eliminate a SmackDown guy winning the Rumble. And that's it for me.
Rich, take the TNA question.
I I've been, you know, on the East Coast cast with Travis, with friends outside of, you know, online and stuff, just in person talking. I am a big proponent of, at least in wrestling, I'm a proponent in letting capitalism work. And if you're selling a product people want, you stay around. If you're not, you need to go away. I am not the biggest fan of TNA constantly being resuscitated, nor am I a fan of Jeff Jarrett returning, because when last we saw him, he was selling gold for a promotion that took 3 years to never get TV. So overall, I am not too encouraged, though I know Kylan just mentioned to me before we started the show, Don West was brought back, which to me is a good sign, but I don't know how much that's going to fix some of the things that ails that company.
Yeah, my feeling of it, I agree with you. I think capitalism needs to have the day. I mean, if you're doing the wrong thing that's not appealing to fans, and someone keeps giving you money, and there's no reason to change, you're going to keep not appealing to fans, and you're going to keep being off center, and you're going to get behind more and more behind where the forces of capitalism are. If you've got to sing, you know, we all have to sing for our supper with the forces of capitalism. So you'll do a better job. You'll do a job that people want to invest in or want to see. And I think it's not so much too big to fail. It's not that big. It never got that big. It's just that the people in it could find somebody that instead of finding millions of wrestling fans to put money into the promotion by buying the product and all the different ways that you could buy a product, they could find one family or one person to keep it afloat and keep them having jobs. And you find, you know, that one, and I'm just not a fan of that. I just don't think that serves anybody's purpose. And I think a lot of damage got done to the wrestling business because by keeping this thing up, that a lot of wrestlers who would have changed their, you know, who would have changed their game, who would have adjusted their gimmicks and their work and everything else, and the creative people who would have evolved, did not, because they got comfortable working the job became, surviving the political sharks, and that was all. And so, you look at AJ Styles. AJ Styles had the talent, you know, clearly all along to be a top superstar. And I don't mean a top WWE superstar, I mean a top wrestling superstar, and was not in TNA because he was constantly misused everybody there was. And when he got out in a place that would take advantage, you know, that was competent, he could show what he did, but he almost, there was a lot of wrestlers in TNA, you have to wonder, could have been in a better place, could have done better. As far as Royal Rumble, I think Darrell is onto something as far as SmackDown having Elimination Chamber afterwards, but I don't know that I'd bet on that. I think that, that's just one of the factors. I don't have right now, just a few weeks out, I mean, a couple of weeks out, I don't have a number one choice. I mean, I don't know. I don't have a number one choice, so maybe leaning towards Undertaker, but I don't know. Rich, your thoughts at this point?
Well, with the Rumble, I'm like most people. I'm on the fence. I was really a big fan of Wade's end notes from, I think, 2 issues ago, where he kind of put the field out in his mind. And to me, I feel like with the Elimination Chamber, that's a perfect way to reset, to set up whomever you wanted to be in that match at WrestleMania. So if, say, at the end of the day, you have AJ Styles retain at the Rumble and Undertaker wins the Rumble, you could still have Cena get the title and set up a Cena or whomever title match at WrestleMania with the Undertaker just by having the virtue of that pay-per-view for you to play with. Now, that means, Raw has nothing to do, but they still have Goldberg, they still have Brock, and they still have a returning Finn Balor. Where does he fit? And, who knows what else they add, if they're going to add, some of the guys who have been absent from tapings of NXT the last few weeks to their roster.
Yeah, I think they've done a good job of a wide open field. I don't know I think WrestleMania looks good for the wrestling part. I don't know that I have this huge excitement for the hype part yet, or what's going to go in, or where's everything going to fall into place there. So, and I wonder whether there's not some cards still yet to be played, and hopefully there are some cards still yet to be played. So, I don't know what they'd be, but you think with that. Since we did a little foreshadowing, let's go to Kylan in New Jersey. Kylan, welcome to PW Torch Livecast.
Thank you, Bruce. How are you, and Rich? Not much, Rich. Glad to have you as Travis's substitute for this week.
Well, yeah, I always look forward to coming off the bench. It's a fun job because the substitute teacher is always the best one, because you can do all the fun stuff and leave the regular teacher for the hard work, as Bruce, I'm sure, is well aware.
Oh, man. Well, I always think, and I've been a substitute teacher too. I always think you have two types of substitute teachers. One is the fun one who does a great job, and then the other one is the one that you just, maybe, anyway. There's not a mid-ground. I'm going to get myself in trouble here. But there's not a mid-ground. There's nothing, either they're really working hard so they can get their own permanent job, or they're satisfied with being a substitute teacher, and maybe not even that satisfied. So, yeah, great. All right, sorry, Kyle, I didn't mean to start thinking about certain people that I've had with the subs.
That's okay.
So, what you got for us?
First question, who is more likely to re-sign with WWE that is currently in TNA, the Hardys or Drew Galloway, or perhaps all three?
That is a very interesting question to watch for the next time, and Rich kind of laid out Jeff Jarrett and Dutch Mantel returning, and they just really returned quickly. Josh, like talked about a little bit, Josh Barnett was on Impact last night, and they, TNA's hit this run of television tapings that they're just having to get done. And so I think they're just trying to get through that. I'm not heartened by what I see, but anyway, are Jeff Jarrett and Dutch Mantel going to be the forcing creative? Are they going to be the ones, or are they going to be the ones, and then the Hardys be what they've been in the last year or so, which is a force unto themselves creatively and in charge of what they do? Or the Hardys going to, particularly Matt, going to have more control? And I think what happens there is going to say a lot. Money-wise is going to be important, but also if it's Jeff Jarrett and Dutch Mantel running it the way they ran it before, running it creatively the way they ran it with that type of product, the way they did it before, and the Hardys are part of that, I wouldn't be shocked to see the Hardys back in WWE. But then again, does Matt Hardy get the creative freedom that he got in TNA in WWE, or do they get promised something and then it gets watered down? I haven't even talked about Drew Galloway, but that's a really interesting thing to watch in the next few months. Rich?
I'm in the same boat. In fact, that's kind of dovetailing what we were talking about before with TNA. I'm of the opinion, especially listening to Drew Galloway this week on Jim Ross's podcast, those guys have become accustomed to a system where they could go to TNA and then they could work whatever other shows they want on their time and not have to get
permission. Yeah, that's an important point. That's right.
And
yeah, go ahead.
if Jeff and Dutch want to go back to a traditional system where you're exclusive, and they even, you know, go so far as to have that archaic, we determine what bookings you get continue. I don't see any of the three of them staying, even if it isn't to go to the WWE, and it's just them adding more dates or being more selective and more pricey with those dates. Because I have a feeling that the creativity they enjoyed in the that antebellum period between Anthem taking over and Dixie departing will be curtailed once those guys kind of get their footing.
Yeah, and as much as I personally enjoyed Final Deletion and as much as it was something of a critical success, it didn't give the Hardys the leverage to be able to go, as far as the rating went, to be able to go look with this. And so, you know, the Hardys and Ring of Honor and what they're doing with the Young Bucks and where that, you know, again, where that all goes. And I don't know that any of this is decided. I my understanding of the family that runs Anthem is it's another corporate situation where they're not very experienced in professional wrestling. And, you know, if you go by resume and you look at running companies, who has more experience at running companies, this Jarrett. The problem is he hasn't run a company that made money. But and then he's a very charming, very intelligent person at, you know, putting forth his side. So I could see where a corporation would be more interested in him than, say, Matt, as far as that goes, if they weren't doing their due diligence, if they weren't really pushing forward a little further and, you know, looking, you know, more than just who wears a better suit. And that's, you know, we'll see where that is. And Galloway has reinvented, you know, his goal was to get out of WWE and reinvent himself. And you know, in these years, I think that he has definitely shown that he can carry weight. You'd think that New Japan would be looking at him, but I don't know if there's spots with that. And you'd think the WWE would be looking at him. So we'll see, with TNA. So we'll see where that goes. I don't have a real feeling where that is. But you're right. You know, you're right, Rich. There are acts now that have shown that they can book themselves and be, you know, kind of find that little corner of the wrestling business and control their dates and make better money than they could make in WWE. And Galloway may be in that position too. So, well, you know, I think he's close to it if he's not already. So yeah, Kylan put his finger on some interesting, some interesting stuff in to watch in the next several months. Let's go to our friend Scott from New Jersey, who I'm sure has his experience. Okay, we're kind of not a good connection. I'll be right back. And so let's go to, let's go to 514. 514, welcome back to the PW Torch Livecast.
Thanks. Hi, this is Mark from Ontario. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
I should have just, what I was going to say. Yeah, thank you, Mark.
Yeah, I've got a couple questions, if that's okay. I guess my first question is, do you think that Jericho and Owens are going to go for some heat on Monday to reduce the boos for Roman by coming out as Canadian champions, as they promised a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, I think they would. I think they would. I don't think it's going to help, but I think it would. So, I mean, I think they'll come out and do that routine. I hated that. You do something to get heat. You give a 2-on-1 match, two cheaters against one four-square champion in an unfair situation, and then it does. And then you act like it's just a normal thing. And I just think that stinks. I mean, I just think that doesn't – it makes the promotion look like it's a clown show, and you don't need that anymore. You don't need any more clowns, particularly in the main event. And, it's just, oh, we got to get the belt – oh, we got to get the belt off of Roman Reigns, but we can't, like, beat him. And I'm sure they'll do that, but I don't think anybody's going to go, oh, I like Roman Reigns because these two jerks are taking the U.S. belt and besmirching it by being from Canada. Rich?
it's weird to me because I talk about this with Travis a lot when we talk about the idea of Roman, and Travis has mentioned, even with you numerous times, the idea that he sees Becky Lynch is one of the true faces of the roster. The way the McMahons view faces doesn't jibe with what fans see a face, because you look at Roman and you look at his behaviors, you look at Charlotte and you look how she's treated. They're treated more like faces, even though Charlotte's a heel and Roman's supposed to be a face. But why would I, when I've seen John Cena, and we talked about this on Wednesday, when I've seen John Cena defend that title three times, almost as many times as Roman Reigns did, when I saw even Dean Ambrose defend that title more than he did, why would I see it as a big deal that he lost the belt? They turned it into an accessory, as much as Vince hates that idea, but that's what they did. I saw Roman Reigns. He happened to have the shiny American flag on his back, and then he doesn't have it anymore.
Yeah, that's true. They built that U.S. Yeah. title back up with John Cena, and then Roman Reigns never really seemed to connect to the U.S. title. It was just, he needed a feud and he could beat Rusev, and that was about the extent of it. I think there's definitely something to that. Do a quick plug for what you're talking about when you were talking about these issues on Wednesday, Rich.
Oh yeah, sure. Well, every Wednesday there is the Pro Wrestling Torch East Coast cast. It is not for all audiences. I'd say parental guidance is strongly suggested. Travis and Cameron Hawkins of South Congress do a wrestling-themed podcast that goes anywhere and everywhere the callers want. It typically starts at 6:30 Eastern Standard Time and goes till about 9 for the free portion you can call in. And then Travis and I usually go till Lord knows when for VIP. So you could always catch that on the East Coast Cast Twitter, at East Coast Cast. Or you could go on Facebook, and it's PW Torch East Coast Cast, I believe.
All right, appreciate that. Let's go to our friend Brian from all Brian from Phoenix, and Brian, you still got some problems. Don't tell him.
Can you hear me a little bit better now, Bruce? By the way.
Yeah, we can. Yeah, now I can. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. I had to leave the adult establishment I was at. Hope you and Rich are having a real good night. First of all, and I have a point, and then I have a comment, and I have a question. I'm sorry about that, Bruce. A comment and a question. First, my comment is that I'm sure, Bruce, that you were very enamored with wrestler CJ Lundy, who was on SmackDown on Tuesday, and she was the jobber who wrestled Carmella. I know that probably brought you back to your days of youth when you saw lady wrestlers look like that. And then also along those same lines, Bruce, from what my understanding is from my search on the internet, that is actually CJ Lundy is actually Marty Lundy's daughter. And I'm never sure what happened to that wrestler named Marty Lundy. So maybe you can research that.
My understanding was Marty Lundy had a son who was getting very interested in wrestling. In fact, I heard that pretty directly from Marty Lundy about a year ago. Lundy, of course, started off working as Marty Lundy out of Georgia, and he turned into Junkyard Dog, looked across the locker room and at Bill Watts and said, You're sending Lundy to Ole Anderson. He looks just like him. Make him an Anderson. And that's what they did. He's Arn Anderson. And when I was in my formative wrestling fan stages, I was not a big fan of women's wrestling because it always reminded me of what it'd be like to see the neighbor ladies, the mothers of my friends wrestle in their one piece bathing suits, and I was these middle aged ladies in one piece bathing suits. I was not a big fan of that, and she was something of a throwback. I wondered whether the name was a rib on agent Marty Lundy, Arn Anderson, or not. But I'm for using jobbers. I'm not for whatever the name you want to call them. I do like carpenters. I think there's more of a respect there. But there's and Al Snow talked about what a jobber was in the territorial days of wrestling, but the person on television who's there to lose and to lose to make the star look like a star. But yeah, it was fun. Rich, you have any comments on Ms. Lundy?
I mean, the big thing for me was, I think, the commentary of JBL and how he went out of his way to just demean the woman. And it was hilarious to me, especially juxtaposing that with NXT, where you're seeing women like Crazy Mary Dobson, Nikki Glencross, Asuka, and even the women outside of the Aussies, word to Jason and Perth, who don't have traditional Vince McMahon-friendly body types, but are doing just fine down there. So it's really, really weird to see, on one hand, that happening on SmackDown, and then on the other, NXT, especially given that they want to do a women's tournament in 2017, and you're not going to be able to find ex-Playboy Playmates who also happen to do Northern Lights suplexes in groups of 32.
Yeah, I just think that you don't get anywhere. You know, he's used to doing that with the James Ellsworth types, and it's not just James Ellsworth, but you don't get anywhere demeaning even not very good women athletes on television. You're not going to. It's just that, you know, and that's what the role she was playing. I mean, that's not going to get you anything. And what it might, except for, what I'm trying to say is there's no reward for it, and there's a risk. There's a risk of pushback, and the pushback it should be there. That's where, I mean, the unnecessary arrogance and bullying sometimes that WWE does to amuse themselves or to amuse the fans who like that. I think there's a place for heels, certainly, and there's a place for healing, but that was just, there was just something, yeah, that's not where you want to go. And thank you for pushing through to that too. Brian, what else do you have for us?
Hey, thanks a lot, Bruce. And first of all, I'm sorry about the noise. It should be a little bit quieter now. Actually, I don't have anything else. The one thing I will say is that I hope that they bring somebody like a CJ Lundy back. I like the retro look. You know, somebody mentioned in one of the live casts about how, you know, maybe it's too close to the Bald Villains, and that probably would be a reason why coming back with that look. But it'd be nice to see her because it would be something different. I'll change my question now, and I'll let you both. Yeah, I'll let you both go, and I hope you and Rich have a real good weekend, Bruce. But my question is, and Rich already answered this question, but you can elaborate, Bruce, is how, if you are going to watch this weekend, how are you going to watch the United Kingdom tournament? Are you going to, you know, watch it live or watch it on, you know, demand, or however you're going to do it? And I'll hang on and listen to both of you. Again, both have a real good weekend. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Brian.
Yeah, as far as my weekends go, I work. And obviously everybody does. And I get to Friday night, and then I kind of look around and go, how's my weekend going to go? And what do I need to get done? And then what else is there? And I don't think that I'll watch it live. I mean, I'll watch some of it live, maybe, depending on what's going on, what I'm doing. But I think that probably I'll watch it on demand and just kind of go through it that way. That way you can take out some of the dead spots. You can take out some of the promo, you know, the WWE Network promos and that kind of thing and push through. I wonder about that too, just for WWE Network viewers. Is this something, you know, instead of parsing it out, is this something where they're going to really watch? It's an interesting experiment. That's a lot of wrestling to watch, and it's a lot of wrestling with wrestlers that most of the, even in the network, subscribers are not going to be familiar with. And then how does WWE set them up and get their characters running and all that? And I think they did a great job with the Cruiserweight tournament, and so I don't know that they're not going to with this, but I wonder. Rich, I know you've followed these acts more than I have. Talk about that a little bit, the challenge of starting this, putting it on the network, and getting it done in 2 days.
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, even with the Cruiserweight Classic, I was a fan of a team like the Bollywood Boys, but since it was a single elimination singles tournament, you really can't get over a tag team when they're wrestling individually. So for a lot of these acts, first thing, I think it's been helped by NXT and the presence of guys like DIY is their size. A lot of the wrestlers you're going to see tomorrow are not big. They're probably 5'9", 5'9 and a half and under. A guy like Roy Johnson, 6'2", and everyone else might be hovering at best at 6 foot, 6'1". They're not going to have, a lot of them aren't going to have the body type that you're looking at for, you know, the quote-unquote, if you were pulling out a book, as they always talk about with Randy Orton, this is a wrestler. You know, some of these guys are going to have singlets where maybe they have a little pudge, but they're outstanding technically. So I'm interested to see how they handle not only getting those groups over, but there are three gentlemen in there, Pete Dunne, and then, oh God, the names escape me, but there's a stable that travels across most of Europe called British Strong Style, and they're all in the tournament, and I'm interested to see if they're actually going to mention that these guys have been affiliated with one another, because it's a pretty big deal everywhere else in Europe, or England in particular. So that's what I'm looking for, because all three are good wrestlers. All three have good personas. Like Mark Andrews, he is a great example of your boy, Trevor Lee, and that TNA had him for years, did nothing with him, and he's one of the finest wrestlers in the world, and now people are going to get to see him with the WWE lens, albeit in a tournament, and they're going to say, where has this guy been, you know, for X number of years? So I'm really excited about it. I'm going to be watching it live. My son has a basketball, his first basketball YMCA class, so I'll watch him running the wrong way and shooting at the wrong hoop, and I can, you know, train him in the ways of Duke and make sure a couple of kids mysteriously get tripped.
You know what? Consider the fact that who one of your family members is. You know, I don't think that's very
One of the first words my son learned was "Boo Duke." So I'm sure Melissa, my wife, will be very happy to see me screaming "Go Grayson, go!"
Man, Rich's wife, tell her where she went to school and what one of her extracurricular activities was.
Yes, my wife, Melissa, went to school at Duke, cheered at Duke, is on the cover of one of Coach K's books while cheering at Duke, and is all in on anything Duke. I live and work here in Pittsburgh, so whenever we go to any Pitt Duke games, she's all decked out in her Pitt gear, and, you know, my son will say, "Daddy, is it Pitt versus Boo Duke?" And she'll just lose it. So
I don't blame her, and I'm completely on her side. You know that one of the greatest Duke players of all time is the radio color guy for Pittsburgh.
I did not.
Yeah, in fact, he was the I'll get this. I'm go to a break and I'll hit that. Something just happened here, so let me go to a break and I'll be right back.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch Livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com, or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com.
And of course, seriously, Rich, you can tell your wife she ought to go over and introduce herself, but the color guy for Pittsburgh basketball is Dick Groat, and he's an all-time Major League Baseball all-star, but he was for years, he was the one great player at Duke in the 50s. My uncle was in school at the same time he was there, and he's in his 80s now. He may have retired just last year. I may be wrong about this, but Dick Groat held the scoring record at Duke for years and years, as far as scoring average for decades, during a lot of my fandom too. So anyway, I just threw that boring factoid out. I did not realize that you were so. Your wife is a very patient person. That is just so wrong.
Oh yeah, she is. To show how patient she is, and I know we have some callers. Before New Japan World happened, and when we had been married for a few years, and she realized, like, what is he doing getting up at 3 a.m. and where is he going? And then she realized I'm downstairs watching on the feed I paid $150 for to watch the G1 Climax tournament. And she's like, I had no idea what that was when you told me the words were together, and I was hoping there was something we didn't have to see marriage counselor for. And
yeah, when you think about it, yeah, honey, I'm going downstairs to watch the G1 Climax tournament. Yeah, that does sound sketchier than it might. You're not calling what's his name from State Farm, though.
So, of
the options, watching Japanese wrestling is probably a better one. So that's all right. Let's go to our friend Jason in Australia. Jason, welcome back to the PW Torch Livecast.
Yeah, thanks, Bruce and Rich. Good to speak to you, and especially you, Rich. I heard you the other week say that you thought that I wasn't coming on because I didn't want to speak to you. Nothing could be further from the truth. I thoroughly enjoy speaking to you, so don't worry about that.
Oh, good. It was tongue firmly in cheek, and I was actually going to send you a tweet today because I saw three Australian newscasters arguing over the fact that they were all wearing white, and I was just wondering if that's just par for the course when it came to, it was the nicest argument I've ever seen in a public forum as far as three people, but I just wanted to see if that was just Australia nice, if I could borrow the Minnesotan term.
Oh, we're very nice down under. We're the most polite people on earth. Don't worry about that. We're extremely nice. Can't you see by
is that
me
true?
The way I've been speaking and interacting with Bruce?
I've never heard that. Australian people are the nicest people on earth. I don't know. I don't know if that's the reputation.
No.
If you get a chance, Bruce, I would literally listen on the spot. Oh, I'm sorry, Jason. I was going to say, if Bruce gets a chance, listen to Wade and Jason have the most polite argument over the third hour of Raw this week. That was this week, right, Jason? Or was that last week?
Yeah, it was this week, yeah.
Yeah, I listened to that at work, and I was like, my good, this is embrace debate as you've never heard it before, because it's like, you know what, I don't like your point, but I appreciate and respect you. And I was like, man, I'm so used to the ESPN method.
Wait a minute. Are you talking about Wade Keller and Jason Powell?
No, Wade because Keller I have, and like, Jason from Perth here.
Oh, Jason from Perth. Okay, all right. I'm sorry. That was...
Yeah, because Jason... I remember Jason's been the first person for months to advocate the idea of the money that has been made from the third hour has basically subsidized NXT and all the endeavors they've been doing in the last few years. And Wade even went so far as to say, now you sound like JBL, and I'm in my, you know, office with the headphones on, you know, like the guy in the classroom going, ooh.
Jason, you gave me the heads up on this. I hate to be put in the position of agreeing with Wade, but I do, as far as this goes. I mean, I just think that money is really important. There's no two ways about it, but I also think that you're cannibalizing your product and in the long term, and maybe with the way television and how we get our entertainment changing, maybe it'll work out. Maybe they'll be valuable in a different way, in a different context by the time the contract comes up. They'll have made a hell of a gamble, but it pay off. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just don't think having 3 hour shows that are rough for a lot of people to watch to get through, and 16% of your audience leaving. I don't see that as a positive at all. Even with the money, you know, even with the amount of money they're getting paid to have that third hour.
Well, quickly, not to rehash everything, but my whole point was just quickly was that I didn't see it as a cut and dry. Oh no, we can't take the money. We can't take that third hour. I just think a lot of thought went into the decision. I can understand where they're coming from. That's all I'm saying. There's just a lot of...
Oh, you know what? That's fair. That's fair. It's a very difficult decision. It's not particularly, you know, if you're publicly traded. I mean, it's a very difficult decision because I think you've made this point too, Jason, not to add to it, but that what happens when you're when your stockholders find out that you've turned down this deal that's lucrative and very lucrative for years in the short run. It's Occam's razor almost.
I guess
I didn't know we were going to be talking about the authors of pain.
Ah, yes. Okay.
my first question is for you, Rich. I just want to talk about that UK tournament just quickly. Yeah, of all the guys that are in the UK tournament, who do you see as ones that Vince McMahon would get behind and push on Raw and SmackDown top stars? Who are the ones that stand out the most that you could see Vince McMahon doing that and then subsequently headlining pay-per-views?
So headlining pay-per-views would probably be tough because I don't think he would trust any of them because of their accents to do that right off the bat. I would say of the group, Mark Andrews would be the most ready to just come out there, work his butt off, and then Vince sees him as another, like a British AJ Styles, if he can handle whatever little morsels he'll give him and kind of force feed him until he thinks he's ready to handle it on his own as far as talking and being cut off. You know, the same things they did with Rey Mysterio and AJ when he first got there, and anyone that Vince doesn't really trust with a mic. The collective of Trent Seven, Pete Dunne, and I never remember the third dude from the British Strong Style, them as a unit, it's great because the smallest guy in the group is the one, unlike Enzo and Cass, the smallest guy in the group is probably the most dangerous. And so I think them as a collective would be a nice faction. And I think that's something Vince would be able to get behind as far as seeing these guys as a gang of dudes. Other than that, and I hate saying this because I just mentioned him to Bruce and I enjoy him so much, I could see Vince McMahon looking at Roy Johnson and finding him to be hilarious in all the ways that you're not supposed to find them to be hilarious and push them.
I guess
in the mid-card or at the top?
Question is because
I would say mid-card because he would see him as maybe even put him in another one of these situations where he's getting, you know, hazed to join the New Day. He could be their international component or something like that. As far as truly pushing someone to the top, I would probably say only Mark Andrews, perhaps Pete Dunne, and maybe Trent Seven if he can get past his body issues.
Yeah. Bruce and Rich, the reason why I asked that question is that, I mean, isn't that the whole point behind recruiting this talent? I mean, and I understand what they're trying to do. They're in a sense playing defense by keeping these players, by keeping these talent away from other companies. And you know what? And I know they're doing that to hurt their competition, but by you putting on a better product, you're hurting your competition. So if you can hurt your competition any way you can, so be it. But to me, look, as a so-called hardcore internet wrestling fan, I guess you could say, all I'm really interested in is Raw, SmackDown, and the pay-per-views that I get once per month. All this other programming, I feel like the more they put on, the less I want to watch it. There's only so much wrestling that I can watch, especially from WWE. So if you give me one good pay-per-view a month that's quality and that means something, I feel like I've more than got my $10 worth because I used to pay more, you know, a couple of years ago. So my whole point is, who out of this British talent that they're looking to sign are going to make a difference on Raw and SmackDown? That's what I'm interested in, and that's where I feel they're going to get the most value for money. Can you understand what I'm saying here, Bruce? I need to see what the upshot and what the end game behind this tournament is.
Well, I think one of the things that Triple H talked about with this tournament and being asked kind of directly what you're talking about is the idea that this WWE Network is a network, like ABC is a network or USA is a network, where you go in and you have something that appeals to this big group of fans, and then you have something that appeals to a smaller group of fans, but you're still serving the part of your fan base that would like to see, you know, the top workers in England and would be curious to see it or already know about it or have that. And then you have, someone that'd want to see a cartoon about wrestlers telling road stories or, you know, all the other stuff that they have that, and I think they're looking for ways to if they can get a lever on, you know, something smaller, but there's a devoted audience to it that can raise, that can help to raise the, and it doesn't cost very much, that can help to raise that that network number. I think that's part of what's going on here. And then also, you know, keeping a finger on who goes where, even in, you know, in the UK, is something that they, you know, where they can control and have some control over exactly how the buzz builds on this and where they pull it. But yeah, I mean, I also wonder about, I think that everything they do as far as wrestlers go, should be it should be like Major League Baseball, where there's you know, you're in these developmental leagues to make it to, you know, to make it to the major league, to make it to, you know, the top place, and they don't sign baseball players thinking, you know, except in very rare cases, that they're going to draw in, you know, in Zebulon, North Carolina, and help the Zebulon team draw. They're thinking, you know, Bryce Harper is going to spend some time, in the minor leagues, and then he's going to go as quickly as we can get him to the big league. And that, I think there's something, you know, so yeah, I think there's a lot of moving parts here, but I'm not impressed with how they work together. I don't think they work together as well as maybe they should, but I think that's the answer. I think that's the corporate answer you would get. In fact, I'm sure it is. Rich, you want to chime in with this?
Sure. I think one of the first things they tried to sell to the masses or to the wrestling media that were assembled when Triple H does these media tours is the idea of this being a la carte option. You don't have to follow the WWE UK product they create, but if it's on the network, you now have another option that's a little bit more diverse, and it allows for you to kind of jump out of the McDonaldization of the rest of the greater WWE product outside of NXT. But my issue is, by doing that, you're also you're changing the very style that's making these wrestlers attractive, because you're not going to allow them to wrestle that style when they're full-time WWE employees and not your satellite people. And I think that's a very
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it too. They don't wrestle your style, and you're not going to change. You don't want to change your style, so that's an interesting part of it.
Yeah, because if you go to, you see what's going to happen as far as British, like the whole idea of British-style wrestling. If you're going to make a WWE version of it, and then you go to Japan and you make a WWE version of Japanese strong style, why not just import these guys at worst? I mean, at my most, you know, crass, when it comes to what Vince McMahon has done and will do in the future, I'm sure, just do what you did before, take the best of the guys, find a character for them, and then get credit for the whole paper as opposed to the research you should have done to write it from start to finish. Don't go to the school and try to write a paper and crib off someone else's notes and then make an inferior product that you're then going to sell as the superior one because you have more eyes looking at it.
Jason?
So how many more extra subscribers do you think they will gain by holding this UK tournament? Now, I ask that because I also read that they're expanding. They might be looking to have like an Asian-style tournament, maybe a Latin American. I can see this possibly working if they then maybe increase the price of the network, because I'm very intrigued about when they will decide to increase the price, because I think the network for a hardcore wrestling fan is just absolutely tremendous value for everything you get. And I would have no issue with them raising the price as they add more content. As Rich said, maybe it could be like different type of content. So you've got the UK style, the Latin American. Like you said, Bruce, there's a lot of moving parts, and I'm just interested when this price rise comes and when they have these different packages, because if they can further get more money out of the hardcore wrestling fans who would be willing to pay, and there's obviously quite a few of them, obviously that's going to make a big difference to their bottom line. So I'm just very intrigued how this year's going to go and how their international expansion is going to lead to perhaps an increase in the options that you can pay for on the network. That, to me, is very intriguing.
Well, I think they, you know, look at it as a way to get into the market, too. They're not doing as well internationally, and to bring more, you know, for example, bring more UK fans into the network. And but I don't know of the billion and a half fans who are already regularly subscribing to the W Network, how many of them are not subscribed? How many folks are out there not subscribing who would go, look, here's this UK tournament. Here's a tournament from Asia, for example. I need to get on this. That they have not done it before, where that would be. That's really interesting, and I don't know that it's there. I still think the one way it's really obvious, and I'm not trying to say that this is any great insight, but the one way you grow that network number is to do a better job with what you were talking about, with SmackDown and Raw and the Sunday night pay-per-views and on the main roster. Rich?
Yeah, I agree. I look at this and I look at these tournaments. They're nice little niche things, but for me, I love watching these wrestlers in their quote-unquote natural habitat. If you're going to give me, it was Tyler Bate. Tyler Bate's the youngest guy on the roster at 19 years old going into this tournament. I've had a ball watching him wrestle in progress. If you're going to tell me I'm just going to see him now cast as like fifth from the top, generic guy, number six, that shows up in a skit holding WWE security shirt that's ill-fitting on him, I don't want to see him doing that. I'd rather see him on progress. Every month, all of us have budgets, and my budget for wrestling has been the same up until the point I figured out I liked progress and I added on $7 a month to get their subscription. I have, the Observer, I have the Torch, I have WWE Network, Progress, and New Japan World. That's about $40 altogether. And, obviously I enjoy listening and reading to all the Torch stuff because I can listen to a Sean Radican talk about Evolve, and that got me into Evolve when I didn't know it existed. But if it's just going to be some watered-down gunk, what are you going to ever get wrestling fans excited about? I think this is kind of a little bit of an overreach by them. And as excited as it's going to be in the short term, the long term it's going to only make them suffer, just like it has with the cruiserweights.
Yeah, Rich, what you're talking about, there's definitely differences from what I'm about to say, but it reminds me of the way I felt as a fan in the early 80s, being a fan of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling and also watching WWF regularly too, but I just thought when the stars that I had seen showed up in Vince McMahon's WWF with Hulk Hogan, they were always watered down. They were taken out of the context I was used to seeing them in Georgia Championship Wrestling or in Mid-Atlantic or wherever, or in Florida. And then, they just weren't as exciting. They weren't given the opportunity to be as creative and to be as good as I thought. And so I understand. I think what can happen ideally is that morphs into something cool that's different and new, but it doesn't always. And it can be, you kind of just go, God, I remember when that guy was good, and now he's, as you said, a generic guy in a tournament. And so that's part of it. Rich, I want to definitely want to thank you for joining us. Excellent job. And particularly, I'm glad we had you on. Particularly that I reached out to you to have you on right before the UK weekend. Actually, Travis did, so I was just trying to take some credit for that. But that really that was the good thing. Although, on the other hand, you may hear from me later during the basketball season too, as beyond any kind of wrestling thing we do. So,
I will try to get my digs in when I can, but it's not going to end well because I know where Pitt is as a program right now. And I know how good Duke is, as much as I will give my wife a hard time. So I think there will be very few times I can gloat over a loss with the Blue Devils this season.
Well, I'm telling you, look up Dick Groat, Groat. So,
I will.
But Pitt's had their years too. So, all right, appreciate it, Jason. Appreciate the call and all the callers, and I will be back this weekend with Wade Keller on the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. Thanks for listening, everybody.
If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with a 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip. This is life.